And I come from the old school thought that the business drives the technology. It is not the other way around. I have had several meetings with colleagues in the industry and outside the industry where they say that the technology shapes the business, but I think it is the other way around. Business shapes the technology. So we have to understand the business. And really, the CIO is not, he's a technologist or she's a technologist by heart. But before all that, they have to be business leaders. They have to understand the business really well to be able to find the technology that serves and enable that.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
We are going to have a lot of fun in this two-part series with our guest, Baz Abul-Anain.
Baz Abul-Anain is CIO of Wofford College. His expertise is in improving organizational performance through innovation and technology. Baz has been recognized by EdTech as one of the 30 higher ed IT influencers worth a follow, as well as one of the top 100 social CIOs globally, and one of the top 13 social CIOs in higher education. The Huffington Post named Baz a top 20 rising star among global social CIOs. Baz earned a Doctorate of Management from Phoenix University and is certified in Information Security Management, Risk and Information Systems Control, and Project Management. Please join us in welcoming to the Digital to Learn podcast, Baz Abul-Anain.
Hi, Baz.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Baz.
Thanks for being here. We actually learned about Baz on a recent article in EdTech. It was the 2021 Dean's List, 30 Higher Ed IT Influencers Worth a Follow. And so lo and behold, we were influenced by this article and we started following, reached out, invited him to the podcast, and he kindly agreed. This is perhaps the first individual we've had that is this rock star in IT on our podcast in education and innovation. And we're excited to see where it goes today.
We're also very thankful that even though he's in the middle of moving, still agreed to appear on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure.
Well, per usual, we like to start by asking some get-to-know-you questions. We do a lot of research to come up with them, mostly Google searches for fun icebreaker things. But we thought this first one might be appropriate considering your place in the world of IT. So out of curiosity, on average, how many tabs do you have open on your work computer at one given time?
Well, I am guilty of having too many tabs open, but recently you will be surprised to know that I really try to keep it down to 1 to 3 tabs. I get distracted very easily, so I try to keep it under control. So 1 to 3 tabs, and I typically have utilities like Pocket or something like that to keep links to future articles that I would like to read later on and things, but I don't have that habit of opening too many tabs, or at least I try to control my urge to have too many tabs open.
Next question. You're about to make a long road trip, actually from Kansas to South Carolina, right?
Right.
I'm assuming you're going to make some rest stops along the way. So let's say you pull into a gas station, you go in to get something to eat. What's the snack or drink purchase that you would be most likely to make?
Oh, boy. Well, you're going to laugh at this, but I am an avid tea and coffee drinker, so I cannot survive without cold brewed coffee. And
yes.
I love to find a place where they serve that. So I would pick up probably some cold brewed coffee and some fresh fruits and keep on going. I'm also a long range driver, so I probably will make 3-4 stops, and I am in South Carolina.
Very good. Only, is it only cold brew for you?
It is cold brew, black. I don't put anything in my coffee, and it just keeps me going.
No matter what the temperature is outside, right?
No matter what the temperature is.
Love it.
You're a hardcore coffee drinker.
All right. In another life, you are a famous band member, or maybe in this life, and we just don't know it yet. What instrument do you play, and why?
Interesting. Well, I would probably pick the cello. I have twin daughters who are violinists, and I usually go to these concerts that they have with their school, and I admire the cello. And so I would think that I will have good additions and good contributions to the team if I were actually a cello player. But I'm not. I wish I was.
That's awesome that you have twin girls.
Are they very different in many ways?
They are. Thank God they are not identical twins. They are fraternal and they have different interests. But I think violin is the instrument that's kind of like giving them something in common to play.
Wow.
Nice.
So we really enjoy. So, yeah, we really enjoy that as a family. And we go to these concerts and lessons and things like that. Obviously, that has changed a little bit with COVID last year, but we are getting back in class in the building activities. So
during COVID, were there online violin lessons?
Believe it or not, there was, Brad.
Wow.
To my surprise. Yeah, it was fascinating. And their teacher, I have to say, is one of the best that I have ever met.
Oh.
And he was very patient. He would actually have one-on-one with his students. And they did fabulous, given the circumstances.
Excellent.
Is there any chance that we will hear a violin in the background of the podcast recording today?
Unfortunately, the violins are packed and gone. But I have to tell you, there were a few days where I had board meetings or leadership meetings at the university, and there's background playing music violin. So I'm sorry, guys, I have to go on mute because...
That's great.
I probably thought, we're paying this guy way too much. He has his own string quartet in the background.
I know, right?
Well, we came upon you and your story a bit from the EdTech articles, but we are curious more about your journey and your career path to this new position that you're stepping into. What's the Baz story?
Soon to become a movie, by the way.
Soon to become a movie.
That would be honor. Thank you, Brad, for the thought. But so the Baz story, I started really developing a passion for technology and digital devices. I remember tinkering with anything digital. I opened things from radios to watches to things like that. And so when it was time to pick a career education, I had no doubt that technology was going to be playing a part in that. So I went to my dad one time and I told him, you know, I looked at many things and I really would like to explore computer science. And can you buy me a computer? Computer, what are you going to be doing with that? Like it was not something that everybody would have. And you either have to be a politician or I don't know how he came up. And I remember vividly, he said politicians. And so you either have to be a politician or a businessman to actually get a computer. So he agreed. I joined the American University in Cairo and I started my journey on learning computer science. And both my parents are educators, so they instilled in me the love for continuous learning, what education can actually do in people's lives. And so when I graduated from the university, and I didn't graduate from the American University in Cairo, I actually graduated from City University of Seattle because I transferred halfway through. I didn't think that I would be working in higher education. I thought I was going to be working in the technology industry, and I paid closer attention to iconic figures like Steve Jobs, Larry Page, and others. And I was fascinated by how technology changed people's lives. Mm. Until 2005, when I was offered a position with Kansas City, Kansas Community College. And quite frankly, when I started back then, I didn't think it was going to be a long journey. I thought it was going to be a stepping stone, maybe 3-4 years, and move on to the private sector where I can make more money and have more influence. And Lord and behold, I'm still here in higher education, and I don't see myself moving anytime soon to another industry. I just love what technology does in higher education, making it accessible, making it affordable for students, and helping educators and administrators measure learning outcomes and making a difference in people's life, not only the students, but even their families. Mm. So that's the Baz story in a nutshell.
Well, here's something just to think about. You don't have to answer right now, but who might we choose to play you in the movie?
I will have to think about that.
Okay.
That's going to be a hard
That's not where I saw that going.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Well, get used to that.
He likes to do that.
That's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
You strike a unique balance of focusing on specific and daily technology needs, and then against large-scale visioning for higher education, innovation, technology in the future. How do you make the dance between what we do today and what we're going to need for tomorrow?
So, Brett, I think education is changing rapidly, and it really is hard to look at the crystal ball and figure out what's going to happen tomorrow. And so I cannot take credit that I danced that dance alone. I have to have a lot of people dancing with me, and it takes more than two to tango in this game. So I think a crucial element that I would have to have is listening, and listening attentively to all the key players in this dance. I have created partnerships with administrators, with faculty members. I have listened to students to really understand what they're looking for, what their expectations are. And through these partnerships, even with vendors. So I have to know exactly what we are looking to accomplish here and understanding organizational goals to be able to find the technology that can serve that. And I come from the old school of thought that the business drives the technology. It is not the other way around. I have had several meetings with colleagues in the industry and outside the industry where they say that the technology shapes the business, but I think it is the other way around. Business shapes the technology. So we have to understand the business. And really, the CIO is not, he's a technologist or she's a technologist by heart. But before all that, they have to be business leaders. They have to understand the business really well to be able to find the technology that serves that and enable that. And more importantly, I think it is important to learn how to say no. Throughout my time in higher education, there had been a lot of distractions. And it is important to say no as much as it is important to say yes to some of the technology innovations that are happening in higher education. So working with administrators, we have to set priorities. Understanding students' expectations, we have to bring these devices and these technology solutions that can meet that.
I am curious, how do you know to say no? How do you come to those conclusions?
By listening and developing trustworthy relationships with your partners. I have had hard talks with vendors where they came in trying to sell products, for example, that are not fitting our institutional needs. And I look at vendors as an extended part of the team when I'm working with them. They are not here as sales folks that are going to be selling a product and moving on to get a new. So I usually set regular meetings with them. I engage not only IT folks in these meetings, I also engage faculty members so they can hear firsthand from vendors and vendors hear from faculty what their expectations are in the classroom. And I have developed close relationships with students so I better understand what their expectations are from the technology solutions that we deliver on campus. I went to the extent of teaching, as a matter of fact, because I wanted to understand firsthand when a faculty member comes to my office and start talking about challenges that they're having in the classroom that I personally had firsthand experience in the classroom so I can relate better to the message that they're trying to convey.
I wonder if we could talk a little more about students. I've been thinking about the relationship between students and innovation. Higher education has become incredibly competitive. And every school is trying to get a leg up on the others by saying, oh, we do this or we do that. I'm wondering at what level do you think students make a choice about the institution they're going to attend or where they're going to stay based upon the level of technological innovation?
Brad, that's an excellent question. And I'm going to give you what I usually tell in boardrooms and to administrators and colleges. Students do not come to a certain college because of technology, but when they come, they expect it.
Okay.
And they either have it or they don't. And if they have it, they're going to stick around. And it is part of the value that they are getting for the investment that they are making. And make no joke about it. Education now is expensive. So if you go to a restaurant, for example, and you're expected to pay a certain amount of money for an expected service, and then you don't receive that service, you're going to be upset. You feel like you didn't get what you're paying for. So students, and I hate to use this example because education is obviously not in the same level like going to a restaurant, but students do not select a certain college or university because of the technology that college or the institution has. but certainly they would expect it when they arrive there. And when they don't find it, like you said, to your point, the competition has become fierce. They will certainly go to a different university because geographical locations and boundaries are not an issue anymore.
True.
So they can be living in Kansas, for example, attending classes in South Carolina or the other way around. So institutions have to be really careful about developing digital strategies and IT strategies that can serve these needs for the students. And it does take time and effort to be able to understand that. It's not something that me and my team can sit behind closed door on a white paper and board and say, well, let's develop a system that we think students are going to be using. It does take a lot of communication with students. It does take a lot of understanding, active listening, and back and forth between many players to be able to do that.
When you say it, like if institutions don't have it, the technology, then students may leave. Which technologies would you say you mean by that, the it? Because earlier you were saying, you know, we try to say no to some vendors and to distractions, whether that's just a fun new tool that you can put in your learning management system or whatever it is that you decide to say no to. It seems like there must be some core technology that they're looking for, and then maybe others that are just for fun.
I think the core technologies that we really look at in higher education is the technologies that enhance the student experience from the time that they are enrolled in the school to the time that they graduate. Obviously, there are many things that come as, is it a necessity? Yes, then we will have to do that. But is it good to have or must have? So the difference between good to have and must have, obviously, technology is not cheap. So we have to be purposeful about what type of technology that we are implementing. But I think the rule of thumb is it going to enhance the student's experience? If the answer to that is yes, then we would certainly consider that. I think one of the trends that higher education now is focusing on is analytics, data analytics. We are collecting a trove of information about students, but unfortunately, not many institutions, many administrators really know what to do with that information or that data that they are collecting. So predictive analytics and having the tools at your disposal to actually make decisions and act on information in a timely manner to serve the student better are some of the technologies that we are trying to leverage on campus.
Well, the conversation is not over. We are going to be welcoming back Baz next week. For now, you can stop and check out resources related to this podcast on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com, and join us again next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.